Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
If in a bar brawl you scream that you're going to break someone's neck, that can be grounds for an assault charge. Same as if you scream, I have a bomb, in a crowded theater. Burn a cross on someone's lawn, though, and you may get ticketed for trespassing or vandalism, but the cross burning alone is not considered by the courts to be a threat. But what if, in the quiet of your living room, you outline a plan to kill all of your neighbors? You pick a day to burn down a school with the students in it, or attack a police department? Can you just claim that you were writing some spooky novel and that your statements are protected by the First Amendment? This is precisely the issue the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear. Can the court precisely define what is threatening speech in the rough-and-tumble world of the Internet? Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard Law School and author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry, and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. Susan, welcome.
Thanks so much.
So as a law professor, does the law make a distinction between, you know, bomb in a crowded theater, the sort of symbolic nature of the burning cross, and the kind of speech that I outlined online, you know, a very specific plot to kill your neighbors or something?
Well, not really. We know that true threats under that opinion you talked about from 10 years ago about the cross burning, where an individual shows an intent to harm a specific person, whether they make that statement online or off, that could be grounds for a criminal prosecution. The problem here in the case that the court agreed to consider yesterday is by whose yardstick should that intent be measured? In the case they're looking at, the defendant said, oh, he was just exercising some kind of therapy by writing down individual threats on Facebook. And most courts have said, no, you look at whether an objective, reasonable person would themselves find that to be a threat to an individual, and measure whether it could be a crime by that objective, reasonable outsider view rather than his internal intent.
And what will the court have to come up with? They're going to have to come up with some kind of test that certain speech, if it passes the test, qualifies as a crime. If it fails the test, then it's innocuous and benign. And they're going to kind of have to invent this test, right?
Well, most courts in the country have already said, the lower courts have already said, that if an objective, reasonable person, a listener, read what was written on Facebook and interpreted it as a specific statement of a threat to an individual or identified individual, then that's enough. It's just the Third Circuit and some other lower courts that have said, no, it can be the defendant's subjective intent that's at issue.
So the Supreme Court will basically be weighing the writer of the speech's intent against the fear of the reader of the speech.
That's right. Is it the speaker's intent, how he felt internally at the moment, that is relevant, that law enforcement has to figure out, or is it how a listener would have interpreted the speech? It's a tricky case because the Supreme Court has been very protective of speech that doesn't harm people, like the outrageous protesters in the Steiner versus Phelps case, the Westboro Baptist Church, even depictions of animal cruelty, those are protected. And here, where you might create an atmosphere of fear through your threats on Facebook, law enforcement can pluck out that language and go after those people.
And that's the category of bullying. Will the court be weighing into bullying? Because I suspect a reasonable, objective judgment of a 9-year-old reading something on Facebook is a little bit different than the reasonable objective judgment of one of their parents or just a random adult.
And that's why the stakes in this case are so high, because anybody can be a listener on Facebook, the whole nation. And a case could be brought by an individual quite distant from the threatening speaker saying, I personally felt threatened and you need to spend some time in jail.
Now, we know Justice Breyer loves this whole Internet world. He's a bit of a nerd on the court. Some of the newer justices also are intrigued by this new law. What about the rest of the court? Are they interested in getting into this? And do you have any sense of how this court might rule?
You know, for me, this case hangs in the balance. I think in general, you've got five members of the court, the you know, the traditional conservative bloc that is very protective of law enforcement's ability to protect Americans. And this case seems to go in their direction. On the other hand, some of those same people are also the most protective of libertarian values of free speech. So they will at least be torn as they examine what yardstick by which to measure the speech, the defendant's intent, the speaker's intent, or the listener's assessment of whether a threat was actually made.
So at the very least, we can expect some interesting questioning from Justices Kennedy and Scalia, right?
Yes, both Justices Kennedy and Scalia will have a lot to say about this case. My betting is that they will thread the needle and support law enforcement in the end, finding that what the defendant did here goes far beyond some playful, you know, poetic expression to something that should be interpreted as a true threat to an individual, in this case, his wife.
Susan Crawford, visiting professor at the Harvard Law School and author of Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. Thanks so much.
Great to be here.